Okay, so we are holding on your dollar number days, the first Mishnah. Continuing on this topic of the Perek of Lahaka Lahachner, that when Torah gives a fixed amount that you have to pay, sometimes it's Kula, sometimes it's Chumer. So the Mishnah says, B'shor HaMu'ad Shehemis at the Eved Lahaka Lahachner Ketzad. Where do we have an example where Shor HaMu'ad kills an Eved? Where do we have a Kula and a Chumer? So like this, Echad Shehemis at the Nash of Avadim, whether the Shor killed the most beautiful and handsome of Avadim, who would be worth a lot more, that's a Korosh of Avadim, or the ugliest of Avadim, who would be worth less, either way, Nais and Shlosh and Selah, the owner of the ox is paying 30 Selah. So sometimes there's a Kula in it, sometimes there's a Chumer. On the other hand, Hemis Ben Chorin, on the other hand, suppose the ox had killed a Ben Chorin, not an Eved, then there's not a fixed amount, Nois and Shavyoi, then the owner of the ox is going to actually pay his value. There's actually a machlokes in the Gemara in Bava Kamma when the Pasuk says that he has to pay Kofer, which is called in the Pasuk Pidyon Nafshoi, is it the value of the Mazik or the value of the Nizik? The Mishnah of the Pashtus is assuming over here that it means the value of the Nizik, the value, the monetary value of the person who was harmed, or who was killed by the ox, which is in fact the halacha. And on the other hand, also suppose that this ox, only injured a person, whether it was a regular person or an eved. Either way, noisin nezek shalom, then the owner of the ox is paying nezek shalom. So the only time that you have a fixed amount is when the ox was a moored and it killed an eved. If it wasn't a moored, then there's no kosher and there's no payment for the eved either. And if it only injured a person, whether a regular person, a ben chodah, or an eved, either way, then you're paying the fixed value.
So you need one condition.
Right. So the Gemara starts. So the Gemara says, "B'mu'ad ein b'tam loy." So what is the Mishnah telling us? That in the last part of the Mishnah, when it says that if the ox injured zeb bazel bazel, whether an eved or a ben chorin, either way, we're saying that you're paying nezek shalom. So look, the mu'ad ein b'tam loy. Apparently, the Mishnah is implying that concept only applies to a mu'ad, not a tam. Normally, we know a tam pays chatzi nezek. However, lema masnisin deloy to Rabbi Akiva. Would we have to say that our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Akiva? It's not. But we learn in a Mishnah in Bava Kamma, Rabbi Akiva Omer, ask tam shechovah ba'adam. The Mishnah starts by describing over there. Suppose that you have let's say two oxen which are both tam injure each other. So each one. So we figure out the respective chatzi nezek for each one, and then whichever one owes more is paying more. Then you have a case over there where then you have a case of suppose that it was an ox that was a tam that injured a person. Or suppose actually what you have is, let's say rather, you have the person injured, let's say the person and the shur got into a fight, and the person injured the shur, and the shur also injured the person. So if the ox is a tam, how much is the owner, suppose that the damages to the person are more than the value of the damages to the ox, how much is the owner of the ox paying? So Rabbi Akiva said there, and the Rabbi Akiva says, "Af tam shechava ba'adam." Even if the ox was a tam and it injured a person, mishalom the moiser nezek shalim. The owner of the ox is paying nezek shalim of the overage. In other words, not like the chachamim over there would say. Let's say, for example, that the person injured the ox to the tune of $100. Meanwhile, the ox injured the person to the tune of $200. So the Chacham would say, okay, that means, in other words, had the ox been a moored, sure, the owner of the ox would owe the person 100, because that would be 200 minus the difference.
Even if it's a moored?
No, one second, yeah, because if it's a moored, you would say, in other words, the owner of the ox owes 200, but the other guy owes 100, so therefore 200 minus 100 gives us 100. However, they would say, if the ox is a tam, then you're only paying 50. You're only paying half of that. Rabbi Akiva says, no, either way, you're paying nezek shalom. You still deduct the amount that the person injured the ox. But Rabbi Akiva says that there's no difference between tam and moored. Either way, you're paying nezek shalom. So why is our Mishnah mentioning only a moored that injured a person? Seems to imply not like Rabbi Akiva. The answer is no. After the tamer Rabbi Akiva, no. You could say that our Mishnah does go like Rabbi Akiva. Hu adin da'afilu tam nami. The Mishnah is not necessarily saying that this concept applies only to a moored. It's not necessarily excluding the tam. But I need a kabbalah mishnah sefer. But because the sefer, meaning not the actual end of the Mishnah, but in the middle, and in the sefer of the resha of the Mishnah, it says, Hamis Eben Ben Chorin, where it talks about the case where if the ox killed an Hamath Evan, Hamath Ben Chorin. It mentions the contrast between if the Shur killed an Evan versus if it killed a Ben Chorin, the Mu'ud, who the Meshkachafa, the Tamla Meshkachafa. Now that whole concept only applies to a Mu'ud. It wouldn't apply to a Tam, because a Tam, you don't pay 30 for the Evan, and you don't pay the value of the person for, you don't pay the kosher for a Ben Chorin. So that particular part of the Mishnah can only be talking about a Mu'ud. Mishnah Halachic, it's only Mu'ud, therefore the Mishnah just mentions Mu'ud, but not necessarily to say that all the Dinim in our Mishnah apply only to a Mu'ud.
So just for the part
about killing an Eved versus killing a Ben Chorin, there we have to specify a Mu'ud because the Din doesn't apply by a tax. But not necessarily is that meant to imply that by the part about the ox injuring the person, that we're saying that you pay Nezek Sholin, that the Mishnah is implying that applies only to a Mu'ud, not necessarily. Maybe it also applies to a Tam, but the Mishnah is not getting into that because the Mishnah started by describing a Mu'ud because that was relevant to the case of killing an Eved or killing a Ben Chorin.
Why the Torah is making a specific case for a Mu'ud that killed an Eved? What's the essential about that?
Well, so the idea is that if the victim was a Ben Chorin, then you're not paying a fixed amount. You're paying the actual value of the Nizik, or according to another opinion, the actual value of the Mazik. If it's an Eved, the Torah fixes a value, 30 Shtolim. What?
The
Eved. No, well, in this case, the Dummim. But in the case of an Eved, the Torah doesn't say that you go according to the Eved's market value. The Torah just fixes an amount, 30 Shtolim.
That's why
the Mishnah is mentioning that you have a Kula and a Chumra in there, because you could have an Eved whose market value was 100 Sloim, and you can have an Eved whose market value was 10 Sloim. Yeah. Okay. So there can be a Kula and a Chumra. Sometimes you're paying more, sometimes you're paying less than the actual market value of it. Mishnah says, but onus of the mafata lahakar lahakmer ketzad. Where you have examples of lahakar lahakmer when it comes to an onus or a mafata, so like this. Now the Torah tells us that with an onus or a mafata, in both cases you're paying 50 sloim. In both cases, the onus of the mafata is paying 50 sloim. In the case of the mafata, he has the choice whether to marry the girl, and if he does, then the 50 sloim instead are hoksuba, so he's not paying anything extra. In the case of the onus. He's not given the choice. Either way, he has to marry her, assuming that she and her father agree to it. And he's never allowed to divorce her. So what do we mean that it's lahakar lahakmer? Echad sha'onas al pita sedola shebekohona. Whether a person raped or seduced a girl who's from the most important family of Kohanim, that's a tanish of Israel, or from the least important family of Israel. Either way, noisim chamishim sloim is paying the same 50 sloim. The Torah fixes that amount regardless of the social status of the girl. On the other hand, therefore there's a kula and a chumra in it, because depending on her status, sometimes you could say that part, that 50 sloim, is what the Gemara is going to call. One second, no, the Gemara is going to call that part hanoah shchiva. This is a payment for the fact that he had hanoah from having relations with her. Aside from that, there's also, and there's the fact also that there's a nezek to her because now she's less marriageable. But, one second, on the other hand, when it comes to the boshes, the fact that he has to pay her for her humiliation, and pagam, the fact that now she's damaged goods, so to speak, like fewer people are going to be willing to marry her now that she's a bola, those are a sliding scale. Those are a kolofi amavayish or amavayish. Those, there is in fact a difference whether it depends on the mavayish, the person who committed the onus or the pituri, because if he himself is an important person, then there's less of a stigma for the fact that he did it, whereas if he's a low-down kind of person, then there's a greater stigma that he embarrassed her. And Bahamas Bayesh, and then the girl who was embarrassed, same idea. If she's from a low-class family anyway, then she's right, not feeling as much of a stigma, as opposed to if she's a Bas Koyanim, or Bas Malachim, as the Gemara is going to say, then the stigma is much greater, and therefore she gets more payment for that. But as far as the actual Hanoach Shriva, as the Gemara is going to call it, that is the same 50 regardless. So that's what we're saying. One second. That's what we're saying. It's lahakar lahakmer, depending on her social status. You might have been willing to pay more or less than 50 sloim to be able to marry her. Now, like this, you're paying 50 sloim regardless of her social status.
Did Yehuda pay Tamar 50 sloim?
Yehuda neither raped nor was Mephatha Tamar. That's one of prison. What is it? No. She was sitting over there by the road and then enticing him. No. I don't think, I don't know of an example in the Torah offhand, an actual case history of Mufasa. I can't think of any. As far as Onus, one example that we have is Amnon and Tamar. I don't think we ever find that he... That's true. Well, okay, you know, it's a good. That the dinim don't apply to him anyway. Amnon and Tamar, it's a good point. I don't think anybody ever made him. Nobody ever made him marry her. I guess because she didn't want her, she wasn't interested. Or actually, well, I don't know. She says afterwards, at least marry me, then take away the humiliation from me. He didn't. It's a good question actually. Now that I think of it, I'll have to look into why they didn't force him to do the dinim of an onus. Maybe because she was. Maybe she made. I don't know. Anyway, whatever it is, Amnon and Tamar is a few hundred years after Amnon. They were children of Dagon. Okay, it's a good point. I don't know. I'll have to look into it. Anyway, the point is, let's get back to our Gemara over here. So the point is, there's Lahaka Lahachmer, because again, whether she's Gerla Shabbat Kavona or whether she's Ketana Shabbat Yisrael, either way, you're paying the same 50 Svoyim for Hanoas Shchiva. When it comes to the other things that you're paying, the Borshis and the Fgam, there it's a sliding scale. So there's no Lahaka Lahachmer. So the question is, the Gemara says, Amai, and this Gemara is also in Ksubos. The Gemara asks, why is it that we say that the Borshis and Pagam depend on her status and on his status? Or another explanation is, why Bechlal? Why don't we say that the 50 Sloyim that the Torah is saying that he has to pay includes everything, includes Borshis, includes Pagam, includes Anas Sheva, everything. Maybe that when the Torah says 50 Sloyim, it means it covers everything, so you're not paying separately Borshis and Pagam. Amr of Ze'era, Yomu, the reason why not? We have to say that it can't be like that, because otherwise people are going to argue that the whole din makes no sense. People are going to argue, Ba bas malachim chamishim, Ba bas adyertis chamishim. What's the logic? If a person was onus or mafata, a princess, the daughter of a king, he's paying 50 sloyim, and if he was onus or mafata, daughter of a hedyot, he's also paying 50. What's the logic? So obviously there must be more payment than that. Tosfos, by the way, brings up the point. The Mishnah used the expression Gedolah Shebe Kohuna. Why is the Gemara instead using the example of Bas Malachim, the daughter of a king? Tosfos leaves it as a question. A couple of Acharonim give various answers there. One is that we're talking over here what people are going to say. People think of kings as more as higher in social status than Kohanim Gedolah.
Could he be executed for the king?
No.
Did he rape him?
Yeah, why? For the most part, the king is no different than any other citizen in halacha. He has certain mitzvahs that apply specifically to him. Fine, there's murder of the malchus, but raping the daughter is not necessarily murder of the malchus per se.
But the only cause of execution is murder of the malchus.
No, it's not the only one, but I'm saying, you know, generally speaking, we don't have in the Torah lahavdil like in many Goyish systems where like the king is a law unto himself. Or something, laws are for the little people, or the expression goes, no, you don't have such things. Okay, anyway, so the logic is, Reb Zeira says, you can't say that you should have to pay the same amount regardless of the status of the girl in the Sama. There must be another payment. If you're going to use that logic, says Abaya, then by the same logic, Gabe Eved Nami, what about the Eved from the previous Mishnah? Yomru, people are going to argue that it doesn't make sense. Eved Notiv Magolus Shloshim, why are you only paying 30 Sloyim regardless whether this Eved was somebody who's very skilled, who knows how to pierce holes in pearls, which is a very high-paying job? Eved Osa Maisa Machat Shloshim, and if all he knows how to do is sew with a needle, you're also paying 30.
Magolus
is pearls. Notes of Magolus means he knows how to make holes in pearls. What's the logic that you should be paying Shloshim regardless of the skills of the Eved, whether he's Notes of Magolus or whether he's Osa Maisa Machat, whether he's very skilled or unskilled? So by the same logic, you could say the same thing. Ela Omer of Zeira, so you're right. Rav Zeira says, fine. The reason is not because people are going to argue that the din makes no sense if you're paying the same amount regarding a first status, but consider like this, says Rav Zeira. Ilu Baal Shnayim. Suppose that you had two men had relations with a girl, echad, whether Oinus or Mufata, as the case may be. Echad Shaloi Kedarka v'Echad Kedarka. Suppose that first one had relations with her Shaloi Kedarka, so that she still has her Besulim. But on the other hand, there's a certain pagam in her. In a certain sense, she's damaged good now. And then the other one has relations with her Kedarka. So now the second one is paying a knas. Is paying the full knas of 50. What's the logic? People are going to argue. What's the logic that you're paying the same 50, whether she already had a pagam from the bia shaloka darta or whether she had no pagam at all? So therefore, says Reb Zeira, logic dictates. Therefore, there must be more payment than just the 50. Tosfos brings a bit of a different explanation. Tosfos points out that Rashi apparently explained that way because Rashi would hold that the one who had relations with her, Shaloi Kedarka, is not actually paying the knas. Rashi would learn that only if he actually removed her Bisurim, which is only by Bia Kedarka, only then is he paying the knas. So Rashi's explanation, in other words, has to be that you have, that we're talking about one girl that was raped or seduced, Shaloi Kedarka, and then later on Kedarka, and another girl who was only Kedarka. Tosfos says, I don't agree with that concept. Even if it was Shaloi Kedarka only, you're also paying a knas. So therefore, Tosfos explains that, let's say, for example, we're talking about one girl over here. One guy was Mefater or Oynes or Shaloi Kedarka. Another guy then did the same thing, Kedarka, and each of them are still paying 50. So again, what's the logic? On the face of it, the second one should be paying less because she's already damaged goods. And yet we don't, and so therefore, if the Torah is fixing 50, it must be that 50 is only for Hanas Shliva, and there's still more to be paid than that, namely Boshas and Pagam. And therefore the Boshas and the Pagam will be a little less for the second one than it will be for the first one. So therefore, the Zayr is saying that's the logic.
What would be the case if there was no
Boshas? If there was no Boshas, then fine, you're not paying Boshas, but there's always going to be some Boshas. Ela Omer Abayis. Abayis says sort of the era that logic still didn't work. Yehachi gabe eved nami. Again, you could use the same logic when it comes to an eved. You could argue yomru. People are going to say, what's the logic? Eved bori shloshim. Eved mukas shchin shloshim. What's the logic that whether the eved is healthy or whether he's covered with boils, you're still paying the same 30. One's pogum, one's not. One's damaged goods, one's not. And you're still paying the same 30. So, and yes, the Torah is saying 30, and that's it. You're paying the 30. So there's no logical reason on that kind of basis to say that you should actually have to be paying Boshas and Pagam separately. Ela, Omer Abaye.
What's the connection between...
Well, just because in both cases, the Torah is fixing an amount, 30 by an Eved, 50 by Ernest and Mephata. And the Mishnah is telling us that you have Boshas and Pagam separately when it comes to Ernest and Mephata. You don't have anything else by Eved. Why should there be a difference? Why would we say by the Eved, the 30 is the entire payment, versus by Ernest and Mephata, the 50 is not the entire payment, it's Boshas and Pagam as well. So you can't use either of Reb Zeira's logical reasons, because the same logical reason he could have applied to an Eved, and yet the Torah doesn't apply to an Eved. Ela, Omer Abaye, so no, rather Abaye says it's not based on logic, it's based on Zeira's Akosu. The Pasuk says, Tachas Asher Omakura, Tachas Asher Ina. The Pasuk says that he's paying 50 because he humiliated her, or because he caused her pain or whatever. No, one second. McLeod, the Ikaboshes of Gam, implying, in other words, he's paying the 50 tachat hasha'ina for the fact that he was ma'ana her, for the fact that he caused her to be uncomfortable by being earnest and mafata, as the case may be, implying McLeod, the Ikaboshes of Gam, implying there's more payments beyond that. Because otherwise, the Torah doesn't have to say tachat hasha'ina. It would have just said he pays 50 and that's it. The fact that it has to spell out tachat hasha'ina implies that 50 only covers the tachat hasha'ina, and then there's other things to be considered as well.
The
Pasuk Tachas Hasha'ina
is in the case of the
Mephata. Well, the actual Pasuk Tachas Hasha'ina is referring to the Oynes. So you're right, to the Oynes. I mean, you're right. In the case of the Mephata, the Gemara explained in the Mishnah and the Gemara explained Ksubas that by both of them you have Boshes, by both of them you have Pagam, by Oynes, in addition, you have Tzar. Because granted, a woman feels pain on her first bia, whether it's consensual or not, but if it's consensual, it doesn't hurt as much. So therefore, the tzar, when it comes, but Boshas and Pagam are the same thing. But in other words, the point is, since it says tachas hasha'ina, implies that the 50 is only covering tachas hasha'ina, and there's still more payments beyond it. Rava says there's a different way we know it. The Pasuk says the man who lay with her is going to pay 50 shloim. Now, why does it have to say a shochavima? Obviously, who else is paying it? It means hanah shchiva kamishim. It means he's only paying 50 for the fact that he had hanah from laying with her. Miklaldi ikamil da'achriti implying that there's something else he's paying for. Well, mind me, or Boshas of Dan, namely that he's paying for Boshas of Dan, and in the case of Onus also Tzad. So that's why we know, not based on the logic that Rav Zeira was using, but rather on the basis of the pasuk, either tachas hasha'ina or hashoset.
So hashoset, who said that?
And Rava brings from the word hashoset. Abaye brings from tachas hasha'ina. So that's that. So that's how it is. Well, so Rav Zeira had tried to use logic, and Abaye is pointing out the logic doesn't work because then you'd have to apply it to an Eved as well. Mishnah says, the Moti Shemra Lahokar Lahachner Ketzad, where do we have an example of a Kula and a Chumra when it comes to Moti Shemra? So Moti Shemra is also in Parshas, is also in Parshas Kitei, say a few specific before
in his face.
What?
No,
well, so we're going to talk about in the Gemara, we're going to talk about Lashon Hara in general. I'm going to get into a whole thing about that. But right now we're talking, there's a specific case in Halacha, which is called Moti Shemra, where, like this, the case is, Parshas Kitei, person comes after he's married and he claims in front of Beis Din, Loimat Sofi Lebitcha B'sula. He claims that his wife was not a B'sula when they got married. Specifically, what he's claiming is she was Mizana during the Eris. If it turns out that he's correct and he brings Eidim to that effect, then she will get Skila. Because she was Mizana, as a Naira Vairosa, so she gets Skila. If it turns out that he's lying or his Eidim are lying, whatever, you have a case over there involving Zomimim, whatever, first of all, he gets Malchus. Second of all, he has to pay a knas of 100 sala. And third of all, he's never allowed to divorce her.
If she wants to divorce.
Then, so if I remember correctly, you have to remember, I'll be din torah, and actually that's how it is even to this day, a divorce has to be with the consent of the man. If it's not, then you have some cases when makimot yachim or rotani. In this case, I think the only way that they can get divorced is if he's required to up the halacha. I'm not sure if she says, I want a divorce. You have a machlokes that Amram holds, that a woman saying, I want to be divorced, I can't stand being married to this guy, is valid grounds to make him divorce her. All the other Rishonim and Achronim disagree with Amram on that. So I don't know. It's a good question. The halacha is not like the Amram. The halacha is like the others, like the other Rishonim and Achronim, that that's not valid grounds for divorce in and of itself. The point still remains that if you have other grounds, if you have valid grounds that he has to divorce her, then fine. Otherwise, not necessarily. Okay, anyway, the point is, so that's the case of Moti Shemra. So the Moti Shemra lahokol lahachmer case. Then where do we have an example of Kula and Chumra when it comes to Moti Shemra? So like this, Echad Shahoti Shemra al Gdoila Shabakohona, whether the woman, his wife, that he was Moti Shemra on, whether she was from the most important family of Kohenim, Balkhtana Shab Yisrael, or whether she was from the least important family of Yisraelim, Noten Mea Sela, either way he's paying 100 Sela. Now, before, by Onus and the Fato, we said he's only paying 50 Sela. Nimsa Ha'oimah, Befiv Chomamina Oisa Maisa. So you see that by him saying verbally that she was Mizana is worse then is worse than the case where he did a maisa of onus and mefata, because he's actually paying twice as much. And in fact, actually, one of the achronim, the Olaf Shlomo, says it's not just that. You could argue, okay, you could argue the difference is that he's claiming against an Eishes Ish, whereas there he did something to a Pnuya. On the other hand, the Olaf Shlomo says, fine, but here we see he gets double punishment. He gets malchus and he has to pay. So that can't only be because it's an Eishes Ish versus a Pnuya. It must be, in addition, that there's something harsher about saying something bad. Yeah. And thus we find, similarly, that the Gzaudin on our ancestors in the Midbar was sealed only because of Lashon Hara. Shenemar is a positive. The Lashon Hara, the Gzaudin, that they're going to stay in the Midbar for 40 years. And actually, there was a further in Tilim, in Kapitel Kuf Vav, it mentions that as a result of the, first of all, I mean, we know, where it actually mentions on the Pasuk the famous thing that Hashem said, you cried for nothing on that night on Tisha B'Av, and in future generations, you're going to hear Lashon Hara. No, but it does, because the Midaglim said Lashon Hara about Eretz Yisrael. Yeah, and the Jewish people accepted Lashon Hara. Shenemar is a positive. By Nasu Oisi Zeh, the problem, remember. The Pasuk says, Hashem says, they've tried me these 10 times, implying, in other words, that this is the reason that the Gzeira was sealed. So in other words, the Gzeira, first of all, that they're going to have to be in the Midbar for 40 years. Second of all, the Gzeira, that there is going to be eventually a Churban and a Golos. So we have the famous thing after Mechit and Bechiyah Shochinam, that Hashem says, you cried on this night for nothing, and therefore in the future you're going to have what to cry about for it. And in fact, in Tilim, Kapitel Kuf Vav, it says pretty explicitly, it says there that after the Chet HaMeraglim, by Yisro Yodeh Lahem Lahapul Zaram Bamidbar, that Hashem swore that he's going to cause their children, them to die in the desert, Ulahapul Zaram Bagoyim Uzaroysim Ba'aratis, and Hashem also promised that he's going to cause their children are going to be falling, are going to be killed among the nations and be scattered among the different lands. So all of that was a result of the Chet HaMeraglim, and all of that was a result of Lashon Hara.
So the question we already are before is, how come Hashem punished the children and nothing to do with that?
So one idea is that it's not so much a punishment as more like a natural consequence, because those Jewish people at that time did not make it into Eretz Yisrael. Therefore, the whole plan of history had to be altered in such a way to eventually bring them back to the level that they needed to be at. And therefore, that had to result in a detour through Golos. It is, yeah. Okay, so Gemara sort of. Mimai, how do we know in the case? Yeah.
Okay. Is the Lashon Hara about Israel as Hamor and Lashon Hara between people?
That's what we're going to get to in the Gemara. Wait. Okay. So the Gemara sort of. Mimai, how do we know that in the case of the guy who's Motzi Shemra and his wife, how do we know that the reason why he's treated so much more harshly is because of the importance of because speaking badly is such a terrible thing, maybe there's a different reason to penalize him so harshly, because if what he was telling was true, he would have caused you to get the death penalty. The apostle says, if what he's saying is true, then they take out this girl and they stone her. So maybe that's the reason why, if it's a false accusation, we treat him so harshly. Nothing to do with the seriousness of Lashon Hara. The answer is Omar Rava, fine, but Omar Kra, but after all, when the Pasuk describes his punishment, it says, Ki Hoti Shemra. It doesn't say because he tried to get her killed. It says because he was Motzi Shemra, implying Al Shemra Shahoti. The main reason he's getting such a severe punishment that he has to pay twice as much and he's getting malchus is because he was Motzi Shemra. That's the point. The Mishnah is saying that we see, therefore, that his being Motzi Shemra is in a way worse than doing an actual action.
And even endangering her life.
Well, the fact that he endangered her life, in other words, is almost like a side thing. The Pasuk is not saying that he gets a harsher punishment because he was putting her life in danger, but because he was Motzi Shemra, because he spoke badly against her. Then we said, we said we find that the Gzau Din against our ancestors was sealed only because of Lashon Hara. So again, the question is, Mimai, who says that shows the seriousness of Lashon Hara? Maybe all it is up until that point, the Jewish people's measure of Averis wasn't filled up yet. As Rav Hamnuna says, Hashem doesn't punish a person until the measure of Averis is filled up. So maybe this is just the straw that broke the camel's back. Who says that it's because of the seriousness of Lashon Hara per se? And we know that Hashem acts that way, as the Pasuk says in Eov, Bimlois Sifkoi, when his fill, Sifkoi means like his fill, like what he can accomplish, is filled up, Yeseloi, then Hashem causes him trouble. So maybe that's the reason why. So in other words, it wasn't Gafka because of the seriousness of Lashon Hara, it's just because this happened to be. They are there, that broke the camel's back.
Sifkoi
means like his fill. Had sapiku, for example, by the camels, means when they finished, when they had their fill of drinking. Okay. The answer is Omar Rish Lakish. Rish Lakish says sure, but on the other hand, Omar Kro by Nasu Oisi Zeh Esapamim. The pasuk says Hashem says they've tested me these 10 times, and the word Zeh is extra, meaning Al Zeh Miskatim Zaudin. Hashem is saying it's specifically this Avera that caused the Zaudin to be sealed. In other words, Hashem is saying, implying by that word Zeh, had it been some other Avera, sure, it might have filled up their measurement, and there would have been consequences, but it wouldn't necessarily have been Nishatim Zaudin, that at that point the Zaudin is sealed and can't be altered. This particular Avera that they did at Lashon Hara. By the way, when the word by Nasu, and we say in Pirkei Avos also, Asor Nisyonus Nisu Abesenu and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, quoted later on the Amud from Pirkei Avos, We usually translate Nisyonus as test, but there's actually an explanation that some of the Mephoshim say. The word Nisu is also related to an Aramaic word for angry. So therefore, it can also mean that they angered Hashem 10 times. Okay. Tanya, we learned... So can mean also anger.
With a tamach.
Okay, Tanya, you have, for example, when it says in Parshas Vayeshev, when Yosef was one day sees the Sarah Mashkin and Sarah Oshem are upset because of the dreams that they had, because they didn't know what's going on with those dreams, as the Pasuk says, Vayar Oshem in his Zoyachim, he saw that they were upset. And the Chazam Onkelos on the word Zoyachim is Nisisim. So the same shorter as Nisu. So Nisu, Avisenu, can also mean 10 times the Jewish people got Hashem upset. Tanya, we learn in a Brayis. So Amar Rav Elazar ben Karcha, Boi Re'e Kama Godol Koyach Shel Lashon Hara, come and see how strong the power of Lashon Hara, what consequences it can have. Minolon Mimiraglim, how do we see that from the case of the Miraglim? Uma Hamotzi Shemra Al Eisim Ba'abonim Kach, Madoch, in that case, they were saying Lashon Hara about trees and rocks, about the physical land of Eretz Yisrael. That's the answer to the question. If somebody says lashon hara about another yid, Allah has kind of a kama. How much more so that he deserves serious consequences? So it's much more serious. So the question is, mimai, but who says that the reason why Hashem was so upset with them and why they were punished so harshly is because of the lashon hara on Eitzim Ba'avadim, Dilma Mishum Dir Chanina Bar Papa? Maybe the reason why Hashem punished them so severely is based on what Rav Chanina Bar Papa says. The Amr of Chanina Bar Papa, Dabar Gadol Dibru Miraglim Ba'os Hashah, the Miraglim said a very big, meaning a very strong statement at that point when they're saying lashon hara about Eretz Yisrael. They say, Dichtiv, Pichazaku Mimemu, they say in the pasuk that we can't conquer those nations in Eretz Yisrael because they are stronger than me, they are stronger Mimemu. In general, the nations of Eretz Yisrael. Speaking of them collectively. They say we can't go up against that people. Kichazaku mimenu, because they are stronger mimenu.
Right.
Now, one second. Al tikri kichazaku mimenu ela mimenu. Don't read kichazaku mimenu, meaning from us, but rather mimenu from him.
No.
One second. Okay, so actually, it's a good question whether there's a difference in pronunciation with you. Rashi in Sota, this Gemara is also in Sota, because we have a Gemara over there about the Meragrim. Rashi takes out the al-tikri because Rashi says there's no difference in pronunciation. Either way, mimenu, whether it means from then us or whether it means then him, Hashem, either way, it's pronounced the same way. Al-tikri is usually when you're substituting a somewhat different word. So what kind of al-tikri? Mimenu means from us, and mimenu also means from him. You don't know, you don't pronounce it mimenu. You both of them are with a shura. Okay, so Tosfos on, yeah, it is. It's pronounced the same way. So Tosfos over here says, okay, that the Tosfos says maybe there's a difference. One is with a dogish in the nun, the other is not. Tosfos says that not. All of them have a dogish. Mimenu. Both of them are red. Mimenu, whether it's from here. So one second. Okay, so hold on. Tosfos is arguing over here, maybe there is a slight difference in pronunciation. Maybe one of them is with a dogish and one is not. However, Tosfos says that's not like that. And in our Chumashim, we have both of them with a dogish and the one. However, the Evan Ezra, on a pasuk in Shmos, where we're talking about, where Para is talking with his advisors over there, Havanis Chakmaloy, etc. So the Evan Ezra says that actually there are different Masoras on this. He says that actually, yes, Bnei Mizrach, which includes the people of Babel, and of course the Gemara was written in Babel, had in their Nusach, actually there was a difference in pronunciation. One had a Dagish, one did not. In Bnei Meirav, in the Masorah of the Jews of Eretz Yisrael, which is the Masorah we follow, they both have a Dagish. So all Gemara over here might be saying, I'll pick menu, meaning without a Dagish, rather menu with a Dagish, or vice versa, or whatever, because among Bnei Babel, they were actually pronounced differently.
So how would you pronounce it with a Dagish?
So if it was a Dagish, it would be menu, as if there were two nun there. And if it was without, it would be menu.
The Dagish is in the
Nun? The Dagish is in the Nun, right. Okay. Anyway, the point is, the Gemara is saying that the Meraglim didn't just mean that the nations of Eretz Yisrael are stronger than us. They meant that they're stronger than Hashem. They're saying, Kaviyachol Balabai, saying Yachol Lohitzi Kelem Misham. They're saying, Kaviyachol, the master of the house, Hashem, is not able to take his utensils out of there, meaning the nations. You have this very famous explanation all over in Chassidus, beginning in the Chutei Torah, that the Meraglim it's not so much they doubt Hashem's power, but like they doubt that when we go into Eretz Yisrael, which is a gashmi stick of land, and we have to live and work in regular parnasa, that we're not going to be able to keep our closeness to Hashem, and in that sense they're saying like Hashem isn't going to have the ability to keep us on the same level, we're necessarily going to fall, whatever it is, but the point is, in terms of our Gemara, maybe in other words, what's Rabbi Elazar ben Parita and our Mishnah saying that you see from that seriousness of Lashon Hara against Eitzim Ba'avonim, there it wasn't just Lashon Hara against Eretz Yisrael, it's Lashon Hara against Hashem, there's Kfira in Hashem, it's doubting Hashem, the answer is, Ella Amar Rava Amar Shlokish. Okay. Ella Amar Rava Amar Shlokish. Okay. So you're right. Rava says in the name of Shlokish. You're right, but there's a different reason that we know that the punishment was not so much for that, not so much for those words of Tfira, but rather for the Lashon Hara about Eretz Yisrael. Because Amar Kroh, because the Pasuk says, Vayamusu Ha'anoshim Maitzia Debasa Oretzra, the Pasuk says the people who gave out a bad report about the land they died, implying, why does it have to mention that they gave Lashon Hara about the land? Al Diba Sa'aret Shoytiyu, that was the cause of their death, is the fact that they said Lashon Hara about Eretz Yisrael. In other words, so to speak, Hashem did not hold it against them so much, the kfira against him, because of Kumimenu, but rather the fact that they said Lashon Hara about the trees and stones of Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, Rabbi Elazar ben Tarka is right, that you see the seriousness of Lashon Hara even against the inanimate objects of Eretz Yisrael.
So why that, that he didn't take offense personally, but rather because he failed the attempt against Eretz Yisrael?
Well, I guess one idea is because one is Choto Machtis Rabin, the other one must so. But I don't know, it's a good question. But also sometimes we find that Hashem is less concerned with his own cupboard than with the cupboard of other people, in this case of Eretz Yisrael, which had promised the obvious. Whatever.
So one more question then.
Yeah.
Lashon Hara about Eretz Yisrael today, is it as serious?
Some people argue on the basis of Al-Gemara that yes. On the other hand, other people say it's not so much, the fact is, it was Eretz Yisrael, but we're not focusing so much on the trees and stones of Eretz Yisrael versus any place else. We're focusing, in other words, if you can have a person says Lashon Hara about the objects that belong to somebody else, where the result is that causes people to not want to buy those things or whatever, and therefore it causes that person a loss of parnassah. So therefore, in other words, it's not so much Eretz Yisrael as the fact that they're dissuading the people from going into Eretz Yisrael.
But the idea we're talking about the Avanim.
I understand, but in other words, the point is, Eitzim Va'avonim, that was supposed to belong to the Jewish people. So it's the equivalent of Reuven bad-mouthing Shimon's merchandise, and therefore now nobody wants to go and buy that Shimon. By the way, the Baal HaTurim on the Pasuk mentions an interesting thing. The word Mimenu, all the letters in it, when you spell them out, are double. Mem is spelt Mem-Mem. Nun is spelt Nun-Vav-Nun. Well, all of them are palindromes, whatever. Vav is spelt Vav-Vav, or Vav-Alef-Vav, or whatever. Therefore, that also hints to what the Gemara is saying over here, that with the word Mimenu, they were doing a double entendre. They were speaking as though they were talking about then us, but really they mean Hashem. We learn in a blight. So let's talk more about the times when the Jewish people angered Hashem in the Midbar. Amar Abihu, the Esther Nisyonis Nisu Abaseinu LaKadosh Baruch Hu. There are 10 times that Hashem, that our ancestors tested Hashem or angered Hashem in the Midbar. Like this. Shnayim Bayam, twice at the Yam Sof, and we're going to give all the details soon. Or Shnayim Bamayim, twice involving water. Shnayim Baman, twice involving the Mon. Shnayim Baslog, twice involving the slog, the quails. Once by when they worship the eagle, and once in Midbar Paran with the Miraculous. So let's work out the details. Is where they sent the Miraculous from.
Midbar Paran is
from Turkey? No, it's part of the desert, south of Israel. Mind you, by the way, all of these, now, there are actually other ones after these also, which, for example, this week, Pasha, you have Korach's Rebellion. Marshall explains we're only listing the ones up until the Pasuk by Nasu Oisis, there at the Pamim, which Hashem says to Moshe during the affair of the Meraglim. So after that, there were other times also, but those aren't counted. We're not counting those because those were already after this. Okay. So let's work these out. Shnayim Bayam, where do we see they tested Hashem or angered Hashem twice by the Yamsuf? Achas Birida Ba'achas Baliyah, once when they were going down to the Yamsuf and once when they were coming up out of it. Be'erida, when they were going down, we know that they tested Hashem and then angered Hashem just because the Pasuk says. They complained to Moshe when they see the Mitzrayim pursuing them. What is it, because there were no graves in Mitzrayim that he took us out of there to bring us to the Midbar? So that was one thing against Hashem. Before they went into the Yam Sof, they see the Mitzrayim behind them, the Yama ahead of them. It wasn't open yet. No, they were afraid. But they say to Moshe, "I'm a Brian Quarum of Mitzrayim. What is it? You brought us out here to die in the desert because there were not enough graves in Mitzrayim." So that's considered
when
they're facing the sea. So that's considered a lack of Amunah and Hashem. That's considered one of the Asot in this year. Okay, no, it's natural to be afraid. Fine, but they still didn't have to express themselves. So what's for doing? They could have said, "Moshe davened for us. We're in great danger over here," or something. You know. Baaliyah, where do we find that they tested and angered Hashem when they came out of the Yam Sof? That we know, Kidur Rav Huna. We know that based on what Rav Huna says. The Amr Rav Huna, Yisrael Shabbat Oisei Adara Mikkane Amona Hoyu. The Jewish people in that generation had very little Amuna in Hashem. And where do we see that? Kidur Rav Bamori. Based on what Rav Bamori says. The Amr Rav Bamori. My Dichtin, what does it mean, a Pasuk in Tehillim, Vayamru al Yombi, that's in the same capital Kufa that I was quoting from before. That whole capital, by the way, goes through talking about the various things that Jewish people did wrong in the Midbar and how we should learn from their lesson. So the Pasuk says, Vayamru al Yombi Yamsuk. The Pasuk says they rebelled by the sea at the Yamsuk, by Yeshim l'man Shmoy, but Hashem saved them for the sake of his name, so there wouldn't be a Chilul Hashem. So what does that mean? In what way did they rebel against Hashem al Yom, by the sea? So it means like this, Malamad Shah, Yisrael Mamrim Ba'os HaShah, means even when they were crossing the Yamsuk, the Jewish people were still rebellious at that time, but only when they were thinking, they were saying, Kishem Shanu Olam Mitzadzeh, just as we're coming out on this side, Kach Mitzriyim Olam Mitzanecha, so the Mitzriyim are going to also go through the Yamsuk and come out the other side. And therefore, they're still going to be pursuing us.
But they didn't even see what was on the other side.
No, they knew they're passing through. Ah, the choice just points out over here. Okay, they may. No, one second. Choice just says, they may be Kane Amon, but what are they thinking? Hashem's going to make a net for them and stream and split the sea for them also. They realize they're going through a split sea. Why would they think that Hashem's going to continue that net for them and stream? So Tosfos says a very famous thing. It's not original to Tosfos. Many others are showing him say this also. They didn't cross the Yamsuk from one end to the other. If they were doing that, sure, they would have no reason to think the Mitzriim are still going to be there on the other side. What they did is they crossed the Yamsuk in a semicircle. They went in from this side of the Yamsuk. Here's the edge of the Yamsuk. You can see over here, the diagram here in turn. Here's the edge of the Yamsuk. They're coming in from here, and they're going in a semicircle and coming out on the same side of the Yamsuk. They're not going across the whole width. So therefore, they figured, in that case, they went in a semicircle through part of the axis, like this. So therefore, they're thinking to themselves, in that case, the Mitzrayim don't even have to follow us into the Yamsuk. All they have to do is go along the shore, and where we come out, they'll be meeting us.
How can they meet up this year if they come up and they would see?
If the Jewish people are going through like this, then they're thinking, we're coming in from here. Meanwhile, the Mitzrayim are going to ride along the shore, and we come out of here. They're going to be right there, ready to meet us. They're going to go on the dry land. They don't need to go through the split sea. So Tosfos mentions that, and many, many other Rishonim, the Rambam mentions it, for example, hold of that concept, that the Jewish people went through the Yamsuk in a semicircle, and some of them are partially explained, because ultimately the purpose of Kriyas Yamsuk was not to get the Jewish people to Eretz Yisrael faster. The purpose of Kriyas Yamsuk was to lure the Mitzrayim into the Yamsuk so they could be drowned over there. So therefore, it wasn't necessary to have a straight path across. But the Act of Emden, actually, on all Gemara and also in the Haggadah, argues with that. He says that the various proofs that Tosfos brings for that are not necessarily such solid proofs. They may well have gone from one end to the other, but still, they could have figured that still, you know, ultimately, the Yamsuk ends someplace. So therefore, they would figure that the Mitzrayim are going to go around the northern end of the Yamsuk, or the southern end, whatever. They're going to go around the end of the Yamsuk and meet them at the other end. Whatever it is, that's Kanei Amono, that they're...
Okay, just Hashem open the Yamsuk to the Mitzrayim and not...
No, they're not going to think that Hashem is going to open the Yamsuk for the Mitzrayim. They may be Kanei Amono, but they're not stupid.
So it was a semicircle.
So again, according to Tosfos and the Rambam and many others, they went in a semicircle. They came in from someplace on the western side of the Yamsuk, and then they went in a semicircle and wound up still on the western side of the Yamsuk, well, let's say further north. And I think, yeah, as mentioned, then it doesn't have to be necessary. They could, of course, let's say from west to east, but still, they're figuring the Mitzrayim are going to go around the northern end of it, let's say. Okay, whatever it is. So that's what we mean that they were mamrim, that they're still doubting that Hashem is going to save them. So what happened? Hashem says to the malach of the sea, ploit oisem liyabosha. Throw the bodies and the Mitzrayim out onto the dry land so that the Jewish people can see that they were drowned and they're not going to be afraid anymore. But the Sao Shoyam says, Have you ever heard of an Eved whose master gives him a present and then he takes it back? You gave me a present. Now all the fish have what to eat, so all these dead bodies of the people and the horses and whatever, and now you want me to spit them out onto dry land? How you talking? So the Hashem says to the Sao Shayam, don't you worry, I will later on give you 1.5 times as many. Namely, and this Gemara is in Pesachim, the Gemara tells in more detail the story that a couple of hundred years later, when Sisera's army attacked the Jewish people and fought against the Jewish people, when Pare pursued the Jewish people, he had with him the Pesach says, 600 of the hand-picked chariots in the Mitzrayim. Sisera, the apostle says, had 900, so that's 1.5 times as many. okay, Tosfos points out over here, the fact is, by Mitzrayim, you had more, you had B'chol Recha Mitzrayim, it's fine, but we're talking about the main, the most important ones, the 600 by Mitzrayim, and 900 by Sisera. Well, that doesn't say, but the point is, it was more than 600, but the point is, by Sisera also, it wasn't necessarily exactly 900, it means there was 900 main ones, and then there were auxiliaries and whatever. Okay, so Hashem says, don't worry, I'll pay you back with interest, I'll pay you back an extra 50%. However, the Sar Shoyam still says, Rabbanu Shel Olam, Klum Yesh Eved Shetevei Etzravoi. How could there ever be an Eved who claims something from his master? In other words, you're saying, you're going to pay me back. It's not like I can take Hashem to Beis Din. It's not like I have the chutzpah to take Hashem to Beis Din and say, pay up. So how do I know I'm going to get it?
What do you mean?
No, but okay, like no, okay, I shouldn't say how do I know I'm gonna get it. But like I don't have the I'm not gonna be able to take you to Beis Din for it. So but in other words the point is, in other words, like you say you're gonna owe me one, but when is it gonna be? Hashem accepts the argument and he says, Nacho Kishon Yehei Arev, the Kishon stream, which is in Eretz Yisrael, will be the guarantor. And that's in fact what happened, because later on, when Sisera's army fought by the banks of the Kishon River, and they got swept into it and drowned, so Nachal Kishon paid off the debt. Yeah. So Miyad called him Liabosha.
Kishon is not deep.
No, but the mess happened there, that it became much, that there was a much heavier rainfall or whatever than normal, and they all got swept away.
How many chariots were there?
900, we're saying. So 900, one and a half times. They paid back. Miyad Poltan Leabosha, so right away then the sea spit out the bodies in the stream onto dry land. And therefore the possibility by Yaris by Yarisrael's Mitzrayim Alvagama, that the Jewish people saw the Mitzrayim dead on the banks of the Yamsu. And therefore, so that was the second way in which they tested and angered Hashem, is by thinking that Hashem's not gonna save them from Mitzrayim after all. So those are the two by the Yamsu. Shnayim b'mayim, where do we see that they tested Hashem twice involving water? B'mara over Refidim, one time in Mara, right after Kriyas Yamsuf, and another one Refidim a few weeks later. B'mara, d'chtiv v'yavoyu maras v'layachu rishtos, it says they came to Mara and they couldn't drink the water because it was bitter. D'chtiv v'yolun ha'amam Moshe, that's actually the passage, v'yolun ha'am is later on. They're supposed to be over here, v'yolunu ha'amam Moshe, the people complained to Moshe. So that's the third one. But Refidim, the Chid by Yachon, the Refidim in Mayim Mishtois, says they camped in Refidim, there was no water to drink. The Chid by Yorav Om in Moshe, and it says the people argued with Moshe. So that was the fourth one. Again, there was a fifth one.
They have to twice about the water.
Because they didn't have the well of Miriam yet. First they had in Mara, where Hashem told Moshe to take a tree, a bitter tree actually, and throw it into the water and got sweetened. And then later on, Hashem, each of these times is also, you have to realize, the Jewish people are testing Hashem. In a certain sense, Hashem is also testing the people to see, what are they going to do? Are they going to be derechetic about it, or are they going to complain? Again, there was another one later on with water in Tarshish Chukas. You have after Miriam passed away, and Berisho Miriam went away. But again, we're not counting that, because only counting the ones up to the Miraculous.
So the main one was...
So there were two of them, in Mara and in Refidim, a few weeks apart. Before.
Miriam was not involved in that?
No.
Mara, Refidim.
Yeah, no. Next, Shnayim Baman, where do we see that they tested Hashem twice involving Baman? Dichtiv, number one, the Pasuk says, actually it doesn't say so in so many words, but fine, I'll take you. It says that Moshe told them, don't go out on Shabbos to collect Baman. Again, it doesn't say in so many words, but the substance of it, the Yatsu, and then the Pasuk says some people did go out to collect Baman. And also, I'll take you. Moshe told them, don't leave over any Baman. Vayetiru, and the Pasuk says that some people left over Baman. So those are the two times they tested Hashem and angered Hashem in connection with the man by not listening to words.
Regarding the man, it says that he told them not to take more in the evening.
No, what Hashem told them is the man is going to fall in the morning, the slav is going to fall in the evening. By the way, the fact that they complained when they ran out of food, that's not held against them. That's not considered one of the 10 nisyonis, because the fact is, people are out of food, they have a right to complain. But that's not held against them. But the fact that there is the fact that they wanted meat also, that counts as one of the 10. But the fact that they wanted bread is not held against them. But the fact that they disobeyed instructions twice involving the man, once that they left over and once that they went out on Shabbos to collect, those are held against them. Okay. Shnayim b'slav, then we have twice where they tested Hashem in connection with the slav, Rishon b'slav Sheni. You have the first time and you have the second time. the Slavrish, and the first time the Slav came was also in connection with the Mon, where they were complaining, the Shivtachem knew, Al Sirabot, they're complaining, we used to sit by the flesh pots in Mitzrayim and have plenty to eat, and now we don't have, and Hashem says, I'll give you Slav. That's a testing, that's an angering of Hashem. And the Slav Sheni, you have in Parshas Va'aloscha, Vosafs of Asher B'Kubur, that the rabble among them, the Eid of Rav, started having a craving and then wanted meat. First of all, they had plenty of animals. Shech, the second of all, meat is not so essential. Second of all, meat is not, no, they could also shech them and eat them. But anyway, the point is, though, meat is not as essential to a person as bread, so therefore they didn't have a right to complain about it.
Bread they did.
Bread they had a right to complain, and therefore Hashem gave them money. Next, so those are eight so far. The ego kedisse, then the ninth one is the ego. Okay, we have, as the pasuk tells us at great length, why what happened over there. And number 10, the midbar paran kedisse, the tenth one, and midbar paran involving the meragrim, also the pasuk gives us in great detail what happened. Now let's talk a little bit about lashon hara. Amar Rav Yechon and the Shem Rav Yosi ben Zimra. First, we're going to have most of this Amud is going to be agadta about lashon hara. At the bottom of the Amud, the Gemara is going to start talking about certain halachas involving lashon hara. So, Amud of Yechon, Mishum of Yesi ben Zibra. My dichtim, what does it mean? A pasuk in Tehillim, my yitin lacha my yosef lach lashon remiya. What can he give you, and what can he add to you? Deceitful tongue. What does that mean? Amalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu with Lashon, Hashem, so to speak, says to the tongue of a person, first of all, Kolei Barav Shal Adam Skufim, all of the other limbs of a person are upright, like they're immediately ready to jump into action. The Atam Muto, and you are laying down, meaning the tongue is laying, lies down in the mouth, implying, in other words, like I made you in such a way that you shouldn't always be jumping into action. All of the other organs of a person that he uses for day-to-day activities are on the outside. You are on the inside. And not only that, I surround you with two walls, one of bones, which is the teeth, and one of flesh, which is the lips. And with all of that, a person still uses his tongue for lashon hara. So therefore, the pasuk is saying, like, what are we supposed to do? What else can we give you, and what else can we add you? What other kind of safeguards can we give that you shouldn't be lashon remiya, that you shouldn't be a deceitful tongue? In other words, the point is, Hashem is saying, like, you know, a person is made in such a way. A person should be able to realize from the way their tongue is placed in their body and inside the mouth. Whenever a person should be able to realize that Hashem made them, that they should be able to control their speech, and yet a person doesn't realize that. If a person speaks lashon hara, it's as if he's denying the essential concept of Yiddishkeit. Specifically, that Hashem runs the world. Shenema, the pasuk says, "Asher omru l'shenenu nagir." Another pasuk in Tehillim: those who say we will be powerful with our tongues, "Sfaseinu itanu," we have our lips are with us, meaning we have the ability to speak whatever we want. "Mi adon lanu," who is master over us? So, like, they deny that Hashem is master over them.
What do you say, "Lil shenenu"?
That's the expression, "Lil shenenu nagir." With or through our tongue, we will be powerful. Or we will make our tongue, well, actually, it's probably more, we will make our tongue powerful. We will give power to our tongue, that's what it is. Okay, how, in what way is lashon hara kosher be'ikr? So one answer is when a person is habitually speaking lashon hara, especially there's the idea of many other averus that a person does, they get some kind of physical hana'ah from. Lashon hara, a person doesn't necessarily get physical hana'ah, doesn't get necessarily hana'ah from it. So therefore, a person acts like that, they're, it shows that they're denying that Hashem even runs the world. Okay, right. There's also an idea that Amram writes that they're at the end of Hilchot Tzaraah, that what happens, I think it was recently in Perek Aleph of Amram, but that Amram describes it. You have a person starts out speaking lashon hara, and eventually they come to start talking about other things, including eventually they start talking about is what the Torah is saying true or not, does Hashem really exist or not, and therefore one thing leads to another. The Omer of Yosi ben Zimra, Kol Masapa Lashon Hara Negoyim Boyim Olav, anybody who speaks Lashon Hara Negoyim, specifically Tzaraas, come upon him. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, another Pasuk in Tehillim, Meloshni Baseith Rehehu, the one who speaks, the one who slanders his friend in secret, Oisai Atmis, him I will cut off. So where do we see that Tzaraas has to do with the word Atmis? Uchtiv Hosam Latzmisus. You have a pasuk in Vayikra in connection with selling a field, where, and that it doesn't that it, that when, that it does or doesn't return any oval. The pasuk says that it's what misses, that's permanently, that's permanent. Or mitagmin and lachalutin. The Aramaic translation of what misses is lachalutin, mean permanently. Or tnan. And we have the word cholut in connection with a masurda. We learn in the Mishnah, ein be masurda muskul and masurda mukhla. There's no difference between a quarantine masurda, meaning during the 1 week or 2 weeks when we're quarantining to see whether it's real tzedakah, or a masurda mukhla to confirm masurda, where you have to go outside the city. El a prio primo. The difference is, does he have to tear his clothes, and does he have to let his hair grow long and tear his clothes? So we see that the word mukhla is mentioned in connection with a masurda, which is the same shortest as Lachalutin, which is the translation of Latzmissus. So we see that when the Pasuk is saying, or you say Aksmith, the implication is Hashem is saying, I will bring Tzaraas on such a person. Melashon Aksmith, the shortest, and the Aramaic translation of that is Cholat, which is a word that's used in connection with Mitzrayim. All right, let's break from Myers.